We are thrilled to welcome again Dr. Jeremy Ude to our, I was going to say to our studios, but well, okay, so he's in the studio on the phone. He is the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts here at UMD. He's an internationally recognized expert on global health politics and the author of 5 books, including Global Health Governance. Jeremy, hi, good morning. It's good to have you with us again.
It's so good to be with you again, Lisa.
So we're talking about the flood of COVID cases, the rise in COVID cases all across the nation. And now it's finally, after 6-7 months, it's like it's finally hitting the heartland. It's finally hitting the middle of the country. It's hitting some of these sparsely populated places, like many parts of Minnesota, where we thought, yeah, well, if we're not in the cities, you know, we're safe. Kind of, there isn't a safe place right now. People are concerned. Well, I know I am concerned or wondering if another lockdown is going to need to be in the cards. I know that public officials are steering clear of that because they understand the way we didn't back in the spring during the first lockdown, that when you do that, there are catastrophic effects for individuals and for small businesses and some entire industries, the hospitality industry in particular, where a lot of folks are not really that secure financially to begin with. And then you talk about, you know, taking away everybody's livelihood. What I was curious about and why I reached out to you earlier this week is, was all of this new information, was this something that nobody could have seen coming? Or were the pandemic plans that were formulated back in the day when this is all kind of a theoretical exercise, was this economic catastrophe and this incredible hardship and this and being caught in this awful place where so many people are between their health or their jobs, you know, their health or feeding their families? Did anybody know that part was coming?
I don't know if people would necessarily have anticipated it would have looked like it did look, but this is something that governments at the state level, at the national level, and internationally, you know, they undertake these exercises to try to essentially war game, what would something like this look like? And so we saw that, you know, we've seen some of these that took place at the federal level and in other countries, and in all of those different exercises and in the pandemic plans that they then produced that existed prior to this actual outbreak, this was one of the important considerations. That's not just, do we have enough ventilators available? Do we have enough PPE available? It's not just that sort of thing, but also, what is this going to do to people's lived experiences? And so this wasn't necessarily a complete surprise from that perspective. But then when there wasn't anything to go along with it, when there weren't any plans in those early days to try to address some of these concerns, then this becomes an even bigger issue. And so, you know, you were asking the question about whether we're likely to see any sort of new lockdowns coming or things like that. And I think what we've seen from Governor Walz and from some of the other governors in the upper Midwest is that there's a reluctance to try to go full on lockdown, in part because we do have more information now. We can do something that's a bit more nuanced, something that is a bit more targeted. But I do think there's also a fear that, given the unlikelihood that we're going to see some sort of federal economic relief over these next 2 months that could help to augment or offset those sorts of considerations that people might be making about, do I go to work or do I try to, keep myself safe? Am I going to be able to pay my bills? Since it's unlikely that we're going to see some of that economic relief over these next 2 months, it'd be really difficult to put people in that position to say, you know, if you're working in the hospitality industry, we're going to completely shut you down, and you're just going to have to fight for yourself. You're going to have to fend for yourself or rely on the generosity of your friends and neighbors in order to get through. And so that also, I imagine, is feeding into some of the calculus that the policymakers are trying to make now, thinking about how do we try to reduce the effect of the pandemic writ large, but how do we also reduce the effect that this has on people's lives, their livelihoods, their ability to actually take care of themselves and their families.
So this idea of, okay, if we have I'm going back now to the theoreticals, this idea, this war gamey scenario where they said, okay, we have to shut everybody down. Did somebody say, okay, well, people can't go to restaurants and people can't go to plays and people can't go to concerts and people can't, you know, travel and stay in hotels. So we're going to need to do something financially for these people. If we're going to expect everybody to lock down and stay safe, we're going to need to do something for these people. Was that a part of the original planning and kind of, you know, gaming and trying to work this out?
Yeah, when you look at some of the war game simulations that took place in around 2015, 2016, one of the important elements that they put at the very beginning of any of these sorts of government responses was we need to do an economic analysis. And that economic analysis needs to look not only at what are the costs going to be to the government to, say, ramp up production of pharmaceuticals or to ensure that there's a distribution system for a vaccine if and when it's created, but also look at the financial consequences that a widespread pandemic would have on society writ large, and then how do we try to, if not make people whole, at least keep people in a position where they don't feel like they have to make that choice. I can protect my health, or I can make sure that I can pay my bills. So this was something that was put at the very front end of these sorts of responses, that this needs to be in the same way we need to identify, do we have enough ventilators? Do we have enough pharmaceuticals, whatever sorts of supplies we need? We also need to make sure that those economic calculations are part of the beginning, because we know that if people feel like they're not going to be able to take care of themselves, or that they're going to imperil themselves or their family, their ability to sustain themselves, that is going to weigh on their ability to take in the other sorts of recommendations about distancing, about trying to avoid crowds, about going to work and taking care of those sorts of needs.
So Here's one of those naive guppy questions that you have gotten used to coming from me. As we were in the early days of the lockdown and this huge cry of, you know, agony became coming across the country from people saying, I'm losing my business, I have no job, I have no money, whatever. Why didn't anybody say, hey, wait a minute, I saw something written down about what we could do in this situation. Where's that piece of paper?
Yeah, to go back in time and to, you know, sit people down and be like, no, we've done some of this before would be, if I had the power of time travel, that would be something I would want to do. You know, I think part of it was that for so long, the message that was coming out of the federal government, to be blunt, was this isn't really a big issue. This isn't something that we really have to try to address. It's something that is going to take care of itself. It's going to disappear. And so by the time we get to the stage where it's obvious that, hey, this isn't what's going to happen, it's almost become overwhelming at that point to figure out, oh, my goodness, now we've gotten too far down the path to be able to really address this in a satisfactory sort of way. So I think part of it was perhaps just a sense of embarrassment that the problem had spun out this far. We can't really separate that any of these sorts of responses out from the fact that this was happening in the middle of a presidential campaign as well. And that also had effects. You know, this was something that we saw repeatedly as a campaign issue in a number of different ways. And so there was also some partisan divisions that were popping up. And that was one thing, that is one thing, I should say, that we see that is unique in the response in the United States as opposed to a lot of other countries where you can't really say that public health or a pandemic isn't political, but doesn't necessarily have to be partisan. And in the countries that have had fairly successful responses, they've been able to keep this outside of partisan rancor. It's not something where you see different political parties that are taking distinct sides on it. And so in those situations where they're not taking those distinct partisan positions on it, then you have seen governments that have been able to say, you know, we're going to guarantee that people are going to get at least 2/3 of their income, even though we're going to shut down these restaurants and bars, we're going to try to keep the workers, the people who would be employed in those businesses, we're going to try to make sure that their livelihoods are still being protected. And so, you know, because of the partisan differences that we saw here in the States, that also impeded our ability to try to either put some sort of more robust economic response together, or once we saw that things were spinning out of control even more than anticipated, to go back and try to engineer some sort of project like that.
you get to a point, and I think we've maybe all been in this situation, writ very small in our own lives, where you commit yourself to a position and then you rethink the position and you want to go back and you want to do something perhaps differently. You want to backtrack, and yet you feel that you've committed yourself now, and you figure that the hard time you're going to get for announcing that you have rethought your position, it's almost as though it's too much trouble. And yet the consequences are so huge for so many people. Now the Trump administration is not allowing Biden's transition team to get access to a variety of different kinds of information that it needs. And Biden's team obviously is stressing that they want to be able to hit the ground running with the pandemic response. Nothing has moved there. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have a sense of when that might resolve itself, be over with? Do you have any hopes that Republicans may step up and exert what pressure they can to say, okay, we gotta all get on the same page with this? Or what are your thoughts about this as it pertains to the pandemic and the situation that we're facing now that seems to be getting exponentially worse every day?
I would hope that for the good of the country, people would step up and say, hey, even though we have these disagreements, even though if I'm a Senate Republican, even though this was not the outcome that I wanted or anticipated with the presidential election, that, the good of the country, the fact that we need to address this should override any of our other sorts of feelings about the election, and that we want to put ourselves in a position where if these early six stories that we're seeing about the two different vaccines are in fact proving true, and that these are going to be real game changers, we want to make sure that we can set up those distribution systems just as quickly as possible. And that, that means that we need to bring the Biden folks in so that they have a full understanding of what's going on, what the government has done, what it hasn't done yet, what sorts of contacts are being made, and just kind of what sort of planning has taken place so far. That would be my hope. I'll admit I'm a little pessimistic that is going to happen in the near term, but I think that even what we are seeing so far is that the Biden transition team has recognized that they may not get that sort of cooperation from the current administration, and so they have been doing some outreach directly to the pharmaceutical companies themselves, trying to think about some of these questions around distribution of vaccines and just get a sense of what these vaccines might be looking like and their likelihood of success, how many vaccines are going to be available, thinking about how we prioritize who's going to get access to the vaccines, because obviously there won't be enough of the vaccines at the start for everyone to get vaccinated right away. So they're trying to do a bit of an end run, or make sure that they're not being completely cut out of those conversations. It's also telling that President Biden, or incoming President Biden, has tapped Ron Klain to be his chief of staff. And Ron Klain is someone who has been a close advisor to President-elect Biden for a long time, but he was also the person who led the U.S. response to Ebola in 2014 through 2016. So this is someone who understands pandemic responses, understands what sorts of levers the government does have available to it, and understands trying to coordinate something like this that necessarily involves just a massive number of different agencies, different organizations, and international partners in order to make it be something that can be effective and can work relatively effectively. But it does, even with all that, if there isn't that sort of integration of the incoming administration with the current administration, it's hard to get a sense of, we've heard these conversations that the Trump administration has planned to involve the military or involve Walgreens and CVS and some of these other partners in vaccine distribution. That's totally great. There's a lot that makes sense about that sort of a strategy, but you want to make sure that the incoming administration is part of those conversations so they know what has been set up. Where are the choke points in that sort of system? What sorts of pledges have already been made so that, if and when these vaccines are ready, we can just go ahead, we can implement this strategy, and we can get these vaccines out to people as quickly as possible so that we can try to get our lives back to somewhat normal circumstances again.
Do you think there, one final question for you, Jeremy, do you think that there is any upside to the idea, especially when you talk about, you know, the kind of fractured response at the beginning of the pandemic? It's not that big a deal. It's not that big a deal. And then suddenly it became a very big deal. And the response has been kind of uneven at the federal level. Do you think that there is any advantage for incoming President Biden's team to say, okay, we're kind of going to start from scratch on this?
Well, to some extent, they're kind of forced to, just because, you know, all the reporting that we're getting from the about the current administration's response is that there's not really it's not like there is a lot that is being left for the Biden incoming Biden administration. It's not like they can keep doing the same sorts of things or that there is a roadmap that they can necessarily follow. So to some extent, they kind of have to start from scratch as it is. And the fact that they are bringing in people who have experience dealing with pandemics, that they are bringing in people who have experience working with international partners and working with international organizations is probably a good thing and a way to really help to reintegrate American leadership into the global health space in a way that we really haven't seen in the last 4 years.
Jeremy, I'm sure that we're going to have the opportunity to talk with you more about this. And it really is interesting to kind of take a look at the pandemic behind the scenes and who is pulling the levers and how do these decisions affect what's happening to us, you know, here on the ground in Duluth, Minnesota, or in Minnesota or the Midwest where we are. Thanks so much for taking some more time for us this morning. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Dr. Jeremy Ude joined us this morning as our guest on KUMD. He is the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts here at UMD. He's an internationally recognized expert on global health politics, and he's the author of 5 books, including Global Health Governance.